All conversations and information exchanged during participation in this podcast or interaction on the doctor.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around that iPad or that iPhone for another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob. Yeah. And Shelly today.
Shelly Sprague.
Hello, everyone.
You should be the third person or be the second person.
You should just always be on This Life.
Anytime you want. She is welcome.
She is our partner and friend and colleague.
Shelly the Shark.
Yes, thank you.
She doesn't like that term.
But
you know,
you're
like Jerry West. I know you love the Lakers. So Jerry West hated the term Zeke from Cabin Creek.
Oh.
He hated it. It made his skin crawl. Elgin Baylor, the great forward for the Lakers, he's still known as Zeke from Cabin Creek. And I know you hate the Shelly the Shark monitor.
I do, because it's hysterical that's what stuck out of everything.
Well, we have a president who's great at naming people. Shelly the Shark.
It's weird how names like that just stick.
Right? I know, it's
Move
hysterical.
Move your mic away from your fit really mouth a little bit.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Shelly the Shark is here.
Yeah. We're going to have Simonetta Lean in here in just a second. She has a book called Everything is Possible. She has a Amazon Prime series called Wishwall. We'll talk to her about that in a minute.
Cool, cool.
But first, we're going to talk to Shelly. So your daughter's going. Can we talk about it?
Yes. Let's talk about it.
Did she
let's
choose,
go.
Did she choose Whittier?
No.
Oh, my God.
No,
Shelly was losing her mind.
She did not choose Whittier. She chose Mills College.
Great school.
All girls. Liberal arts college.
It's up in Northern California?
In Northern California.
Very high quality.
Gorgeous.
Very high quality pot up there, baby.
She will come back. She will come back a changed person.
I know,
but you know what I told her?
You know what I said to her? I said, just please keep in mind that you can come back as changed as you'd like, but please just come back and don't wear Birkenstocks.
Oh, my God, I know.
I said the same thing to Paulina.
And what happened?
She got Birkenstocks.
See? Birkenstocks. That's what's going to happen now because I said it.
But yeah.
she got over the phase.
It didn't last very long.
Oh, good. Okay. Fingers crossed.
So she went to an all-women's college, too. You don't say girls' school, you say women's institution.
I'm sorry. I am very new at all of these.
The political correct.
You know, I
am very new.
I don't want to put down Birkenstocks. I went to Bloomingdale's the other day, and they had some really cute Birkenstocks.
Well, they have new ones now.
They cost like $400. Is anybody aware of that?
No, I'm not, because I've never priced
them. One of the
reasons I'm happy to see Manette is coming in is because she is a fashion model, and she has a fashion company, and so if you're Shelly, you can go nuts on that.
Yes. I'm very excited about this, actually. I must tell you, I'm very excited.
So, Mills, I think Thelonious Monster played there. I don't want to scare you, Shelly.
You can't be serious.
Yes,
you can't
I think so.
No, there's no way.
Yes, Mills College.
They did not
how the hell would I
gate.
Know that's in Northern California?
They wouldn't let you in that gate. I know they wouldn't have. They don't.
So, you know, Shelly wanted her to go to Whittier, Richard Nixon's alma mater, and she was had a full scholarship
this
to
is
Whittier.
A better choice.
Full scholarship to Whittier, no money, pay no money.
Pretty good deal, but Mills is an amazing place.
Well, we went there,
yeah.
And it was an amazing place, yeah. And I could see that she felt very relaxed there. Mm-hmm. It's a tiny college. I think that's what's good for her. Yeah. She's probably going to need people to really engage her, you know, as opposed to Berkeley
They'll grind her.
They'll get more one-on-one.
The one-on-one, I think, is really going to be crucial for her.
Agreed.
She loves that kind of work, and she deserves it. She's worked hard. She has worked
hard.
She's
a great kid. Can we just say, we criticize so much parenting. Shelly's done such a great job with Ivy.
Oh, thank you.
I told you that a few months ago when we were talking.
I
could cry. She's done an amazing job.
Thank you so much.
We're two junkies coming from the Scream Club in Hollywood. Like, you became a great mom.
I feel so lucky that I was able to get it together, you know, before I was, you know, a mom, because I really know that I could have made some serious mistakes and a lot of damage if I wasn't sober.
Some of your trauma was from your mom.
some of my trauma was from my mom, and you know, and those things, you know, always do play a role.
I was able to change
what needed to be changed, and I think that we were able to move forward in my parenting, and as well as, I mean, her dad has been there every step of the way. I think it's crucial.
She's a calming influence, but you're the one making it happen.
Well, I'm definitely the locomotive that is pushing along, you know, the creativity. And that's what sometimes you need, is that somebody to come in and say, yeah, that's great. You're super talented, but what are we going to do to get to the next step?
And work, how's that going?
Work is, you know, the recovery field has changed a lot since we were together working.
It's not even
inpatient.
The same field
it's
anymore.
It's not the same field anymore. It's a real struggle for me to open my mind and change things for the clients and know deep down kind of what they need, but them not being really ready to hear it.
Well, let's do modern treatment so Drew can understand our frustrations, right? We were always under the assumption that junkies are amazing. They just need to stop taking drugs and they will embrace this community and figure it out. Much like Shelley and I and Adam and Anthony and everyone you know did, that these people are not like that.
No, I get that. I get that.
So then treatment becomes how to get a job, how to talk to your parents, like the most primal basics of life, that you just become exhausted by it all because the drugs are always looming there. Addiction is always looming there. They're going to get caught by the addiction anyways, and we have to teach them how to talk to their parents.
But the 12-step community always captured that, right?
They're tired of it, I would think.
12-step?
You got to be grown up to be in 12 steps now. Mm-hmm. I think there's been a last 5, 6, 7 years, like, listen, I don't know your mother. I'm not going to talk. I've had guys that I sponsor who are sponsoring guys who the sponsee wants them to talk to their mother.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that AA ain't going to do that.
No.
Yeah. Right?
Well, I think it's a nice blend of, you know, skill building and mental health.
Oh, see, she has all the clinical terms for it. Talking to your parents is a skill building, Drew.
It is. I mean, these guys are 18, 19 years old. You know, they don't have the skills, and they weren't raised by people who taught them, you know, these
autonomy,
early skills. And the autonomy is not there. But I think ultimately there's a lot of mental illness that is being
personality,
covered up.
Personality or organic?
I think personality is huge.
We were always dealing with trauma. Is trauma the underlying?
Trauma is the underlying factor. Yeah. And the trauma is being...
Is it a different kind of trauma? Is it not sexual
and physical
abuse?
It's not sexual and physical abuse. I would say a third of my clients do not have physical or sexual abuse.
Right. So
what is it? Enmeshment and
emotional
just
trauma.
Icky. It's just
covert.
Covert. Yeah. It's the covert stuff. Yeah. I think we've dealt with a lot of the overt sort of abuse.
Yeah.
We've put that on Front Street. People are aware now of how to behave and how to raise children within
a certain framework of
health and wellness. But I think the covert stuff that still people struggle with and don't get therapy, the parents don't get therapy.
Well, the parents were the product of the overt abuse. Now they're performing covert abuse on the kids.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I don't think it's anyone's particular fault that these things are happening. I think it's just the evolution of, you know, how American society works and how we're moving forward in our progress.
Isn't it weird that the overt abuse is not as disabling as the covert abuse has become?
That's crazy,
right? Isn't that weird?
So another thing,
remember
you used to say, like, whenever you started using, that's when you stopped emotionally developing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So kids use it at an earlier age. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
15, 14.
I know. I'm seeing 10.
10.
10.
Right?
10.
So... So on top
is that
of that,
because it's available in the medicine cabinet, or
is it pot?
It's weed. Yeah. It's 10, and it's weed, and it's under. I think people just are not educated around substances and what they do to the brain, just on a scientific level.
Right.
It's really not a moral issue. It's that
they don't
want to
hear it, though.
Something in your
brain. They hear morality when you say, you know, pot is not for children. Is my simplest slogan.
right? And I consider America considers people children until they're 18. So pot is not for children.
Or alcohol.
You sound like a moralist, and then you get attacked. Oh, you're just closed-minded, or what's your problem? You're Mr. AA guy. I'm like, no, it's a scientific fucking fact.
Yeah. Well, where are they getting the pot?
Everywhere. Moms go sign up my clients to get their medical marijuana when they're 15.
The
moms, well, 10 is an extreme. See, now
I
we've
think
said
10 is
10,
really low,
but yeah. 14, 15, moms are going and helping their children get medical marijuana cards. This is 10 years ago for anxiety. And I'm just like, why didn't you ask why a 14-year-old's anxious? Because they have pimples. That's why they're anxious. Oh, people don't like them. That's happened to every 14-year-old in the history of America.
Wow.
And they're getting marijuana for anxiety.
Marijuana.
How is that, Drew? You're a doctor. How do these doctors say marijuana is an anxiety-relieving drug?
Because it has some short-term anxiety-relieving effect for some
It always
people.
Made me paranoid.
Right, me too. But,
not my thing.
But it has some people it'll affect anxiety short-term. Long-term, it makes it worse.
Long-term, it makes it worse. Yeah. And that's what I'm talking to these kids about is that their brains are wired on cannabis because they've been smoking it so long. They come off the cannabis. They feel worse.
Yeah, sure.
You know, as we know
that
they would.
Withdrawal 6 months sometimes.
The withdrawal, they can't eat. They can't sleep. They're anxious. And, I mean, they're real.
And they can't sleep.
They can't sleep. And then they just go back on it because, you know, how our society is right now is like weed is the cure-all for everything that's a problem. And I don't know how that happens.
Panacea is the word Drew uses.
But I would imagine the reason why it's that way is because I think it's now producing money.
Oh, sure.
Billions.
Billions. Oh, yeah.
So whenever I see in America, in my experience, is that whenever I see things making millions or billions, it becomes...
I have said it forever. There will be... Big tobacco will be replaced by big cannabis.
And I feel
Absolutely.
Like that's where we're at.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that and I'm wondering, am I up for this one? Am I up for this fight?
Well, let's get back to the clients themselves.
Yeah,
so,
it's an interesting question.
So when you
right?
got...
Well, I don't know.
But
I don't know
I've stopped fighting.
But
I
Drew,
fighting.
Drew, when you got somebody off of heroin,
yeah.
right? Pick anyone of the thousands of people you helped get off heroin.
Yeah.
They knew what to do to thrive. You now have a generation of young people who do not know what to do in order
you
to
know
achieve
what?
Thriving.
I would argue that most of the heroin addicts we treated had a misguided sense of what they needed to do to thrive. They needed to adjust a lot of ideas about living, but they were competent.
They were competent.
Yeah. And they had some competencies. You're saying there's no competencies now, which is crazy.
But let's look at this though, Bob. Now you have to look at this. The people that you guys treated had
I'm talking
some,
about when I was his client. I'm talking about the 80s.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But you guys, yeah, but you don't understand what we're treating now. People back then who got treatment, parents or someone paid for it.
Yeah.
Now people have insurance and their parents are paying $500 a month to get whatever taken care of by that insurance policy. And the thing is we are not seeing the same population as you guys were seeing then. People didn't go to treatment. People went to the methadone
clinic. So these people never went. They didn't get access to treatment.
No.
The low functioning people.
No, they went to methadone clinics and they were on methadone, just like they're going to be given Suboxone or they're going to give
Benzo. So what she's saying is you were dealing with elite, wealthy musicians and artists.
It's not true. It's not true necessarily, but your point is well taken that there's more people awareness of treatment coming to treatment, less willing to go to methadone treatment.
More access to treatment.
What's the difference between methadone maintenance and weed maintenance?
Nothing really.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying is that there's nothing really, but maintenance for people who need maintenance. Why do they need maintenance, and what is the difference? Because those
That's
are the questions
we don't know.
I'm
well,
having.
So the
why
question
was it created in the first place? It was created because the original opioid addicts, junkies, as they were known in the 40s and 50s, were criminals and non-functioning lowest ebb of the food chain. So let's just monitor them and keep them safe and keep them sated. What I'm saying is a lot of these people are never going to have a job. I don't know that they could work a job.
Well, I would argue.
Is that just the millennial thing?
Weren't you with me when I talked to
it's
Dr.
It's even younger than millennials. I don't know when millennials are anymore. I've been crucified.
They're 30 now.
They're mid-30s?
Yeah.
They're 30.
I think
now.
It's 18 to 36.
Yes, exactly. I think it's like, I think 18 is the next generation.
No,
like,
that,
I think it's
that's like, Generation Z.
Yeah, 19? I think it's like 22 to 36.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a 36-year-old. I have a 36-year-old client who still gets an allowance from his parents.
Oof. Weren't you?
You do too, if you think about it.
Of course.
Wait, allowances.
Don't you, Bob, don't you?
Oh, well, that's a family trust. That's different.
Oh my God. Is that different?
Yeah, it's no. much more sterile and comes in the mail. You don't have to go to dinner with them.
Right.
Well, that's fascinating. Well, number one.
Sorry,
interesting.
Yeah, interesting. But weren't you with me when we spoke with Dr. Dole, the guy that invented the whole methadone thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was saying he was more naive than we are now. And he thought he was going to restore people to work. He thought he was going to get people off drugs. And he thought they were all going to do 12-step. Yeah. He thought they were all going to do treatment, too.
Well,
and
that's interesting. I really need the stat sheet on that, because that's what they're telling me that these cannabis folks are going to do.
I
don't see it.
Well, I see it at Carl's Jr. They are stoned out of their minds working at fast food.
Yeah.
Stoned. Like, they have these pot brain freezes, and you have to fill in the gap for them. You know, like, they just, it's amazing.
I think that's what happened at that burger place we were at in New York that one night.
People are stoned.
In the restaurant, it was like, can I get a glass of water?
Yeah,
sure. 10 minutes later, can I get a glass? Yeah, sure, I'll get it. And then 20
it's
minutes later,
rudeness.
No water.
They're stoned, I'm telling you.
Have you seen the scromiting yet?
What's that?
The intractable vomiting from pot?
Oh,
I
no.
haven't seen it.
Screaming I would love to
wait,
see that.
Wait.
If they smoke enough, they'll start getting these intractable episodes of vomiting.
Wait.
They take hot showers. It's the only thing that'll break it.
Really? Yeah. Because I do have this one client.
Keeps vomiting.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's pot. It's weed.
I'm so glad I came here today. Yeah.
It was originally called scromiting, because the vomiting was so intense they would scream and vomit at the same time.
Oh, my God.
And now they're getting burns because they're in the hot shower, like someone's trying to get it to break.
I was literally standing at the front desk.
And they vomited in the lobby?
Right next to me. Right.
Shelly's not a big vomit person.
I'm not a fan.
Doesn't really like vomit.
I mean, I'm not a fan. Who is a
vomit?
Fan?
I used to vomit all the time.
Come on.
It didn't bother me
rehab.
Anyway.
She had to clean it up all the
Listen. When I was vomiting, that was one thing. Dealing with other people's vomit is a whole different story.
Okay. Maybe we should move
let's
on to
do.
Fashion.
No, let's bring on to fashion.
Yeah.
Clean the palate.
Okay.
We are going to bring in our fashion expert, Simonetta Lean. Simonetta, welcome to the program. Sorry, it was in.
Welcome.
There you are. Welcome.
Thank you.
Rescue us. Yes. Oh, by the way, I just want to say I am a millennial, so I hope I'm welcome.
Okay.
And by the way, they started millennial generation starting in 1981. So pretty much.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm 36. So I'm
there
pretty
it is.
Much there.
You're right in the.
I don't know. I try to advocate for my generation. So if you like, we can even talk about that a little bit, because I think that our, a little bit of a stigma in the generation, and I actually see a lot of millennials that do a lot of things. So I work very, very hard. So
yes,
we're not saying there's not high achieving millennials. Mark Zuckerberg's a millennial.
We just see a lot of the lower functioning folks, so we're a little biased.
Every generation has a personality, right? I'm a part of this.
Definitely.
Since we've been talking about generations, actually, me and my friends are no generation.
Oh,
like, technically,
really?
Yeah, there's this 5-year gap in 60 to 65 that it's really not a baby boomer and it's really not a Gen Xer.
Yeah.
And that's me, Flea, Anthony, Pete. Everyone I know is born in that era. Mm. We are our
too
own
much
kind of world.
Yeah, too much change
well,
to be a baby boomer for these guys.
It's what they call these overlap.
Yeah.
These overlap generation.
I would consider you guys really Gen X.
Gen X. We are the creators of Gen X.
I think you guys did actually pioneer Gen X.
I think Simonetta's right on the border, too. She's an overachiever.
Yeah, you could be interpreted as a borderline Gen Xer.
Yes, definitely.
She could.
Yes.
She could.
Sure. I mean, kind of, actually, I don't know. Eventually, I, as a millennial, I see, of course, a difference. I was born definitely with Actually, no, I transformed myself with a cell phone because I wasn't born with a cell phone. There are definitely millennials that are born with a cell phone and, you know, social media. So that is, of course, also my type of, I would say communication, but I'm borderline, like you're saying. So I'm kind of, I consider myself like an old soul. But of course I also have those tools. So I think it's pretty cool because I can learn, I would say, from the past and, you know, still use, of course, all these amazing tools that, of course, social media to me, it was one of the biggest revolution that we had, of course, in both ways, in a very positive way, because it gave a lot of freedom to a lot of people and also a possibility to create their own world, their own job, their own reality. On the other end, of course, also negative when, you know, it becomes too much borderline. I myself, you know, you guys were talking about mental illness. I myself found, you know, speaking about that because in social media, there's a lot of that, you know, that anxiety that, you know, the idea that you have to be always perfect and out there. And then, of course, in a click, you are in front of the entire world. So, of course, again, to me, it was a blessing because, for instance, to me was part of definitely helping me with my career. But I see, of course, all these problems. And I don't know, I think we are in a kind of a moment, a transitional moment where I hope at least we are recuperating, you know, the old ways and the school, I don't know, what we had in the past to, of course, bringing it back to the new ways, I would say. At least that is my hope. You know, that's what I'm trying to do because social media can be also tricky, of course.
Well, yeah, let me ask you this. So what social media did for you, you were a model. It empowered models.
Yes.
It empowered you where you had more power because a lot of my acquaintances are models. And in that generation, yes. Shelley's laughing. I know some models. So it gave them their ability to brand themselves. They just weren't this piece of meat that could be thrown and sold for $1,000. Look at Shelley. I just know models. What are you talking about? Stop looking at me like that. But it was true. It was very empowering for, you know, models that aren't necessarily on the cover of Italian Vogue every month. And you weren't just taking any job the agency told you to do because you could create this brand about yourself. Almost you could make yourself more famous than the institutions could.
Yeah, a brand.
Right. And I thought that was probably what you're referring to. You could take control of your career better than models of a generation before.
Absolutely. In fact, there are so many millennials or also younger than that ask me, oh, I want to be a model. What would you you think I should do? So, of course, there are many ways. There's, you know, the classic model way. So meaning New York Fashion Week, you go casting to casting. And that is, you know, the old fashioned way. And that's one way. Social media gave me, for instance, the opportunity, like you were saying, to create my own brand and so my own audience. And so honestly, I don't have to do that. I didn't want to do that. I started when I was 16. And this is, of course, my personal story. I'm not saying that is, you know, the story of everyone. But for me, I remember I was, you know, starting to do the catwalk. I was a pretty girl, was very young. And they told me, hey, if you really want to, you know, be a top, you have to stop eating. Basically, that's what I've been told. And I looked at this guy. I'm like, what?
Boo.
He said, yo, you're very tall. You know, you're very pretty, but you have, you know, to really watch out, you know. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, so my father's a medical doctor.
Good.
My mother's
a
psychotherapist. I found myself 16 talking with them. I'm like, no.
Well,
so that was a dream
good.
Of mine.
Did you see the kid?
But
the kid just collapsed.
In a way, I was shocked by what that guy told me.
Good.
But listen, hold on one second. This is newsworthy. In Sao Paulo, at a show night before last, a kid collapsed, a male model collapsed and died on the catwalk.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
because
God.
They're starving themselves to death. They're using medications to not eat. Uh-huh. It's still going on today.
It is. Yeah.
Today, right now, starve yourself in order to look right on a magazine cover, right?
Yeah, it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And I'm so glad.
It's very sad.
I'm so glad that you are against that, and you were raised by a medical doctor who encouraged you to you know, be healthy, because that's the message we need to be sending to folks.
Absolutely.
Is to be healthy.
Absolutely. I still remember it. It seemed so vivid to me. I was shocked by what this guy said. And of course, you guys were talking about, you know, drugs addiction. There's a lot, you know, they just go on cocaine because they have not to eat and perform, you know. And that's why, to me, social media was a blessing, because, again, gave me the opportunity to create my own brand. Of course, again, I am a model. It's part of my job. I'm also a writer. I write for Forbes. I write for The Entrepreneur. When I actually, you were asking me before about my book, I actually was also working for Vanity Fair. I am my own novel published. I was working television, radio. So that is my background. So that is part of, you know, my career, I would say. But social media gave me the opportunity to bring everything that I had to say and create a name for myself and a brand for myself. And so now, of course, you know, when I model, that comes because of me, because of my name, because, of course, of what I represent. And that's actually, if I have to talk really like a sister to a young girl, I would say, go with social media. Like, create your own thing. You can absolutely be a beautiful model, whatever your shape, whatever your body is. Of course, you have to be aware of the more, I would say, more the message that you send out there. And there's so many brands that will want you as their model because you represent that particular thing. And you don't need to starve, you know.
I think it's a great message that we stop telling people that they need to starve so that they can be successful, because I think it's wrong.
But the
Jew's been thinking a lot about this.
No,
what
just,
do you think?
Well, I'm just thinking the business model is selling clothing.
Yes.
And they don't care about the models. They sell, no. care about selling the clothing.
Right.
And if they need a certain thing to sell the clothing, that's what they're going to get.
Then put it on a hanger.
I'm just saying that.
If that's what they want them to look like, is hangers.
But if you want to be a model.
Mm-hmm. Says the girl that weighs 86 pounds.
Right.
I do not.
But you don't think you were influenced in some way?
But if you want to be a model, your job is to sell products.
Sure.
But again, nowadays, brands to sell, they go, yes, of course, they have traditional models that do their shows, but they go to influencers because they want, you know, something more genuine, something more, you know, that actually, of course, can appeal a lot of people with our, of course, their followers.
So
that's why, again, like I say, it's tricky. It's not always positive, but at least it gave, you know, a broader possibility to girls and, of course, also men that have that passion to create something. To me, that it's also deeper, because I was talking about message, you know. Sometimes, like you were saying, you imagine a model, you just see a body. Well, with social media, you have much more than that, because you
lifestyle,
have to, you know,
lifestyle.
Say things, you have to write things.
You use your mind.
You have lifestyle. I mean,
well,
I
think what she's saying, though, is that if the brands are smart, they'll use other brands to sell their brands.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily
right.
models to sell
their
brands.
Oh,
I just
yes,
can't
exactly.
believe how many
yeah.
times the word brand yeah. is used in a typical everyday conversation.
Well, the other side
I was
of...
talking with the Skinny Confidential people. That's what they talk about, their brand.
I
talk to musicians at Coachella. That's they're a
brand.
Everybody's
yeah.
a brand.
But if everybody's
I'm
a
just
brand,
Bob.
Then nobody's a brand.
This is not a brand.
If everybody's a brand, then nobody's a brand, though.
What?
If everybody's a brand, then
nobody's a brand. Yeah.
Right?
Apparently, I've been told I am a brand. It doesn't feel like a brand.
No, but you know what? When I was modeling, I never used an agency, and I used radio to do my social media, and that was how I got, you know, work for myself. But if she has a million followers, of course she's going to have the opportunity to get on the runway because they're going to want her to promote what.
Right.
Yeah, they want.
Right. That's
of course.
The point.
Yeah,
of course,
it's a snake
yeah.
that eats off itself.
It's the brand selling the brands.
But Shelly's a brand. Why are you shunning the brand thing?
I'm not shunning the brand.
Somebody
thing.
Came
I
up to me
feel...
and asked me, like, you're so genuine and authentic. I really want to get to know, like that it's a hustle of some sort.
Uh-huh.
Like, genuineness and authenticity.
It's like a hustle.
It's a brand,
oh,
Drew.
Jesus. Oh, my God.
That's the world we're living in.
I just don't like, I don't really buy into all of that stuff. I mean, maybe to my demise, I don't know. I mean, I just really have a problem with, I don't really love the idea of having to put out or promote something.
We've always let it hang out. Shelly calls me 2 months ago. She goes, Bob, I need to talk to you. I go, okay, what's up? And she goes, Ivy's going to school, and I'm going to need more money. So I'm going to need to start doing some of the things that you do to make the cost to cover her college. Yeah. So that's basically branding. Yeah.
Okay, that, that used to be just like a business move. Now it's
branding.
What
you could do? She's doing this thing called Interface. You could start.
Yeah,
talk
she
to
would
people
be the best
vision on Interface. Tell everybody what Interface is.
It's an app where you can be an expert.
Oh, right. It's not. I've heard of this.
I think you've heard of Cameo.
This is an expert.
This is a different. This is for
what
experts.
What am I? Okay, well, we're gonna have to talk about this. But we don't want to.
And Drew does it. He charges $800 an hour, and he can give one-on-one consultations.
Shelly just got really – she just paid for
She's
Ivy
got,
school.
Oh, my
right
gosh. Because I need about $3,000 a month extra right now.
Well, we could probably set that up
let's
for
work,
you.
Let's work this
you
out.
You can't do treatment. It has to
no,
be education.
No. It's
got to
be
like
education.
That.
Okay,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, cannabis education, right. Cannabis in the brain, young people and cannabis. There's but,
psychoeducation.
I just gave
I
you three topics.
But the internet
topics.
Sort of strangely repriced everything.
Okay.
Because I get $36 or $42 or something for every 15 minutes from Medicare. That's all I get. That's what I get. For an hour of practicing medicine.
I can't.
For an hour of practicing medicine, I make about $50 because I have to $100 in overhead.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of overhead.
So, but all of a sudden, the internet, you can charge whatever you want.
So, look at it's empowered clinicians. It's empowered. So the internet and social media, getting back to our guest, it's changed the world, and it's empowered so many different individuals.
Obviously, I need to get that.
Yeah, well, Shelly, you're behind the
I am.
The game.
I know. You're right. But I have been raising a daughter. I have been raising
a
daughter.
You need a Susan Pinsky in your life.
I do need a Susan Pinsky. I've always known that.
But you guys, with a blessing, with many blessings come curses. And this divisiveness and this mean-spiritedness and this the anxiety we were talking about earlier that's caused by people being attacked or criticized on the internet.
Yep.
That's the fallout from it. That's the collateral damage. But it has empowered millions of people. I would say models most of all. When you talk about
look at the Kardashians.
Yeah, when you talk about a typical model that say was I was acquainted with in the 80s, Shelly. They were lucky to make, you know, $4,000 a month, you know, working different shows. They were treated like meat. They would be up for jobs and not get them. They would miss them because they were out all night with me. It was a
Yeah.
Like, you were not a good
So
influence
it was
on
not
a
it was not
industry.
A safe Absolutely. Life to live in, and here they starve themselves. They've made it through so many hoops it takes to get to that place, and they're still treated like shit. I like the new modern where you can brand yourself and have a million followers and empower yourself economically, right? And then, like
Absolutely.
Susan says, and then they come back and ask you to do the catwalk because you have a million
girls,
followers.
Like I was saying before, if I have to talk to them, like if they're my sisters, honestly, I will tell them to go for you know, that path, because like you were talking about business money. Well, you can make a lot of money through brands because again, for brands that's their new way to sell. Right. And so it's the new commercial, I would say, even that has to be monitored. I mean, I think that there was a little bit of too much, I would say pushing of that brands. Start not to like that. They're starting, I think, in a positive way, like I was saying at the very beginning, to get related to messages. So again, they try to find those people that also have a brain, you know, it's like, okay, you're cute and everything, but what are we saying through this, you know, campaign? Because at the end, and this is very millennial, of course, because millennials, you know, like experiences, like, you know, people say about the millennial generation, but it's true, basically through a campaign with an influencer, brands trying to find a way to give experiences, I would say, to their customers, you know, to be associated, to feel part of something. And that's why many times they also try to find a message that it's, like we were saying, empowering, that or can do something, sometimes even related to charities, so that people can really feel, you know, that they are doing something. And there are a lot of brands that are doing that. And I think that is a good way, I would say.
We got a break. Drew has that look where part of this you like and part of this you don't like. I can tell. Let's talk about it after the break.
All right, take a little break. Be right back. Let's talk about CBD. It's, of course, everywhere today. It's a hot topic, and I get asked about it all the time. Bottom line, although there are way more claims, there is very little clinical evidence just yet. The science is lagging behind, but many people are using it and reporting anecdotally very good results. I want to first define exactly what we're talking about here. CBD, or cannabidiol, is an extract from hemp. And while you might associate it with marijuana, CBD is the non-high, non-rewarding component of hemp. And it's responsible for other effects, calming, sleep, not high. Now, about the products. There are a ton of them out there today. Forget the vast array of reported health benefits. It's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards. No hype. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is clearly described to you so you can make an informed decision without promises that seem too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD are compelling, and I'm excited to see how things develop with the science as this booming industry gets going. So if you want to try CBD, you might check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That is my site, drdrew.com/SELECT. For a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout with the code DRDREW. We are back. We have Simonetta Lean. Everything is Possible is the novel. The Wish Wall on Amazon Prime is where you can see her. I'm just thinking about it. I just am not – I don't know.
Do you like the Tom Shoes idea? Do you like all these – because she talked about a philanthropic brand. So if you buy a pair of Tom Shoes, they donate a pair of shoes, right? That's made
–
that has lifted Tom's to equal to Nike.
But I understand, but it's
kind of a business hustle.
Yeah,
based for millennials.
It's exactly right. It's what I was sitting here thinking. God, geez, you know, why is that different than a – company that is very successful and quietly gives philanthropic money away, why do they have to beat their chest about it? You know, that used to be
because that's what you have to do.
They used to be considered unsightly. Like,
yes,
you know,
lack of decorum.
Yeah. And it's like, what, you're now it's like
about that.
As though it didn't happen before. It's always happened. And now people are getting paid for it. It's sort of interesting.
Because if you're making a ton of money, you just have to say, well, you know, I try to give back.
But they always have.
That's true.
They always have. And now it's maybe building it into the business is something that we just have
to
do.
Well, the thing about fashion, Drew, is that, you know, a lot of people love fashion. They spend a lot of money on fashion. And to have your place of philanthropic giving is always a good thing. It just, they've done it for forever, and it's just the way it works, because it is kind
of.
Well,
you guys want to talk about fashion, Shelley and Susan?
Well, I love.
Ahead.
I just have to say that I looked at your clothing, and I love it. And I think that
it's inspirational.
I think you're very inspirational, and I give you a lot of credit for in such a competitive arena as fashion that you've been able to, you know, rise above a lot of the pettiness around fashion, and that you've been able to move into directions of helping others with your giving. And I think that that's amazing. And I think that, you know, you're talented and incredibly bright.
And she's a workaholic. So
you're not
like
a millennial.
Yes.
She's not a millennial.
I know.
Come on.
I work 20 hours a day. I know. I know. I work too much.
But
you
have that in common. Addiction problems.
Very common. And again, this is another millennial terminology. I'm very passionate about it, but it's true. I mean, I really like, and to respond also to what you guys were saying before about the people who are always doing the charity. That's true. But like we were saying, the world has changed. And also you have to see about the era that we're living. What I'm trying to say is that, for instance, actors, actresses, they were always doing that. They were doing it for free. But also, I mean, the pay that, I mean, they were paid million of dollars, right? So it's kind of the time has changed. So yes, you can do, of course, a nice business out of social media, but it's not like that. It's not like the huge, you know, kind of things. And so I believe, and this is, again, my experience. I cannot talk for other people, but there's a lot of people that are very genuine about it. And they really, you really see they are passionate about a message that they're, you know, trying to give out also through a brand. And I think that, again, I don't know. I personally, for instance, the one of my clothing line is done with in collaboration with a fashion designer. I know for a fact that she really does. She's actually originally from India. Her name is Shahida Paradis. And she actually, I know that for a fact that she goes with part of the proceeds, and she goes to try to help women to become entrepreneurs in India. There's another brand that I collaborated with. They're also from India, and they do bags. And they actually they train their people to create those bags. They are like really honestly guys that they didn't have a chance in life, and they decided to you know, train them, bring them back, and to, you know, really teach them something, you know, give them a tool to give them a profession. There's another fashion collection. It's I don't remember exactly the name. It's but they what they do is, and again, they go to Africa and they bring women and they teach them how to actually create something, and they make money and they can actually use their money to go to college. So there's a lot of that, and it's real. I believe me. It's 100% real.
It's real. It's just, it's the way things are, that that people it's called, there's a great documentary that Keira Maruth made, mm-hmm. that that made Bob and the Monster, called We Live in Public. We now, everyone on earth lives in public, so your philanthropy is going to be in public. Everything is in public. My children are in public. You know, I posted a picture of Sid when she was swimming in a 2-year-old swimming in a play, you know, people were sending me, like, you know, perverts are going to look at that picture and jack off. I said, that's not my problem.
Yeah.
Right? She's a little girl playing in a, it's summertime.
It's cute.
It's cute. But how can you live your whole life worrying about that, the anxiety that the internet causes, that, oh, some pervert's going to be jacking off to your 2-year-old kid? That's his prerogative, I guess.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean? So we're living in public. We're all interacting 24 hours a day,
which
7 days
a
week, all the time. And we don't even really know what it is that's going to come of all this.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's
definitely,
no, not yet.
Definitely,
not yet.
If you do a good act, you put it on Instagram. You know what I mean?
Different viral.
Than the generation we grew up in. You do a good act because you owe, because you're so, you've been so blessed,
and you do it
quietly, and you don't seek. There's only, I'll say this: I have some friends that do things very quietly, right? Everyone around them says, don't do it quietly. Everyone else does it publicly.
Jelly.
And they've decided, no, we want to do things the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
But what is the point of doing it quietly or doing it on the
self-aggrandizement.
Internet? But is that the point? What is the real point?
Of putting it out versus
of putting it out versus not putting it out. My feeling is that things that are done for charity to help others is associated with humility and humbleness.
And selflessness.
And those are the gifts that you receive when you are doing things humbly.
But this is
a
new,
selfless to put
this
it
is
out.
A new version, guys. This
so
is
that's
a new
what
version.
I'm asking is there, I'm sure there is pros and cons to both philosophies around doing that. I'm a quieter person. Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't sound like that.
Yeah,
right,
but if you made
second,
$3 billion in fashion, you'd want to give back.
Would,
like, you'd
yes,
be like,
I
you
would
know,
give
I could probably
back.
Give away, you know, I also need a tax break or whatever. But, you know, that's the thing. There's so much money in fashion.
I just love when you see donors.
Well, I wish that I could.
Because I do a lot of stuff. And you see donors and somebody gives, and the donation is anonymous. Doesn't even have their name attached.
Yeah, but
that's
whatever.
The old kind of way.
Yeah,
but you got to respect it. Older people like me and Drew are going to like
if
the different way.
If I gave $1 billion away, I'd want everybody to know.
Right,
I did
guess
it.
The bottom line is it's different goals, right?
Different
some
strokes for
wants
different
the full
folks.
Spiritual benefit of giving, it's selfless.
It's selfless.
If you
want
to just
anonymous.
Do it to build your brand, or you want to do it and to get some benefit and to do what's right, you can do it publicly.
Well, let's look at.
I think
shining.
People just don't want other people to be jealous of them.
No, but you can use your social media standing to shine a light on. We certainly do that on the LA Unified School District, one of the worst in the history of mankind.
Mm-hmm. Well, so your property taxes are going up to keep funding that.
So the idea of, Shelley had to start her own school so her kid could get educated and go to college.
Exactly.
So you shine a light on the inadequacies of our school system by saying, we've started a nonprofit charter school, or we've started what Shelley did. We've started a nonprofit music education school because the schools get billions of dollars yet don't have any music in them. Mm-hmm. That to use social media to spotlight inadequacies. Mm-hmm. And you have to celebrate what you're doing in order to gain the attention at the problem.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Well,
let's talk about your charter school for a second. Was you feeling that Ivy's needs weren't being met? How did you get involved? Have you ever heard her talk about it?
No.
She's been involved in this for 15 years.
Crazy.
Yeah, 15 years.
15 fucking years she's been running
a charter school,
Drew. Did you ever hear her talk about it?
No.
Never. Because that's
it's
how people used to be.
It's one of my greatest accomplishments. It really is one of my greatest accomplishments.
Sure.
But I certainly was under duress because I didn't have money for private school and I was terrified of LA Unified. With you know, good reason.
Good reason.
With good reason. And my daughter is a special child and she needed special things. And I was lucky enough to find some other folks that felt the same way about their kids. And so we joined together to start Los Feliz Charter School for the Arts. And now Ivy's a senior in high school and you know, graduating. But we started when she was in kindergarten. And that school is still going.
What about
going.
People who crap on charter schools?
Well, I don't know how new charter schools are put together, but ours started in a living room and it was nonprofit and it had to be Title I, which means it had to serve a certain population of low income. And we had to achieve that in the charter.
Sure.
And so I had to go out to all of the fairs for an entire 18 months to get people to sign up to even go and get this charter approved at the state level. Mm. And I had to get people involved that were scared of charter schools or scared of this type of education that wasn't sort of functional things that they were used to and it was out of the realm. And so basically what we utilized was arts for children to learn. And it was a great, great school. And now Ivy obviously is seeing the benefits of that. And she literally grew up in Los Angeles proper, in the city of Los Angeles, in a small town type of school where the principal ate dinner at our apartment. Mm.
So here's the thing that I love about this.
Everything.
We're a different.
Here's the thing I love about it. Everything.
Well, how about the fact that we've seen each other every day for those 15 years, and you didn't know that was going on because you didn't go around bragging about yourself.
Yeah. She was too busy.
Yeah, it's very hard
but,
for
but
me.
But I still
to,
politically,
to
I wish she would tell the story over and over because we need the people to support that kind of thing and to do that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, when this whole strike was happening.
Simonetta.
Oh, sorry.
Simonetta. Next.
Yes.
Next. Your next wish wall has got to be about. What Shelley did. We'll get another one going. Get another charter school going. Have Shelley tell you how she did it, and then you find a group and you do another one.
Another charter school.
I want to know from Simonetta what the ShahidaParides.com heart to heart foundation is, how that works.
I've read about that.
Everybody's got to see this fashion. It's really cool. It looks like Cavalli, which is
one of my
favorite.
Now, that is actually, so was our clothing line. So she came to me because of me as an influencer. And then she discovered that I had this passion that got translated into a charity, because at the beginning it was a blog that I started actually with Vanity Fair in Italy. I was interviewing celebrities about how they basically achieve their goals, their dreams. And that's how it started. And then I realized that I was lacking the everyday people. And so I put up a blog and I started to ask the people, what is your dream? You know, what are you holding on? And my thing was actually, and it's something that I've learned in India. In India, they have actually these wish trees. And the idea is that you write your wish and then you hang it in the tree and you kind of give it to the universe. And so to me, it was a little bit of the same idea of course, it was more public, but it was like, put it out there, you know, stick it out, because, and this is, of course, they'll teach you that also in psychology, though, in counselor, because I'm also a counselor. I've studied a lot the fact that when you write your things down, when you write your wishes, when you write your goals, then you start, you know, to have them clear in your mind. And so that was my first input, and that's where it started. And then because when I actually moved to the U.S., I went to the city of Philadelphia. And I share this idea of putting that concept, that online concept, into reality. I'm also an artist. My first degree is in fine art. I'm a painter. And so I was passionate about murals. In Philadelphia, actually, I don't know if you guys know, but we have the biggest mural art that actually there are that we can find in the United States right now. There are murals that are amazing. And so I went to speak with a counselor in the city, and I said, why don't we do kind of a wish wall, so something visual? And they liked it so much. So when Pope Francis came to Philadelphia, they decided to sponsor an event. And I put up my first real, you know, wish wall, real meaning, you know, something that people can come and actually write in there.
How cool is it?
What part of town is that? Because I had like a turnout of people. I don't know, it was completely filled up with wishes from, and actually people ask me what kind of wishes. Honestly, there are also, of course, wishes that are personal, but many are a reflection to me, to society, to the city. It's very, from a philanthropic point of view, it's very interesting, because through the wish wall in different cities, you can actually understand the reality around you. It's very, very unique. And in that case, I actually was attracted by a wish that a woman wrote. So she came, she wrote this wish, and then she started crying and she ran away. I ran after her. And I don't know, I felt this empathy with her, and I asked her, what's going on? And this was a sister of, a young woman. She was actually my age. She was 33 at that time. And when she passed away, she was killed in a hit-and-run accident. And, you know, like you guys know, whenever you live in a big city, the city do a little bit for you, and then you are one of the many, right, stories. Mm-hmm. And so she came to me and say, I just wish for, you know, some justice. I want to find this person, and I want also that the city will not forget my daughter, my sister. Actually, I was a sister. So I went to the city and I started to speak about this story, because I was very touched by it. And I said, what can I do? I mean, at that point, imagine that I moved from Italy in 2015. I would say it was January. That was September 2015. I just established the Wish Wall Foundation. And I didn't even know anything about, you know, American laws. And I was like, what can we do? And so we started. And my idea was, I want to rename a street after this woman. Mm-hmm. And when I started to say that, everyone told me it's not going to be possible. I mean, maybe in 2 years or some. I said no, because this woman died on December 23rd. So 2 days before Christmas. And I said, we're September. There's no way that I'm going to leave this family, you know, without Christmas, you know, because they're going to, I mean, that actually would have been the first year without her. And they told me there's just forget about it. I mean, it's Philadelphia. It's a big city. And I don't know what happened. I started to really to call everybody. I really wanted to help them. And believe it or not, on December 23rd, there were the people from the city putting up the sign. And actually that street where she grew up was permanently renamed after her. Her name was Teresa Pozzi. And so now you go and the street's name is Kimball Street. So it's now Kimball Street, Teresa Pozzi's Way. Aww. So that happened actually in 2 months, record time.
Yeah,
and
family.
Then after that, yeah, that was, believe me, when I tell this story, I still have goosebumps, because it seemed kind of a miracle to me. And then after that, of course, the biggest one was that they wanted to you know, catch a killer. And even that, I said, listen, I'm just a woman that, I mean, what can I do for this? I don't work in, you know, with the police. I don't know what to do. But then I just used my brain and I said, okay, but how much reward you guys put? $2,000. I said, no one will ever speak for $2,000. And so I convinced the city and then AAA and then Clear Channel to put higher reward for, I think it was $15,000. And Clear Channel was so nice. They put up like a big billboard, you know, where she was killed, saying about the new rewards and, you know, hoping. And actually a year later, exactly, it was around pretty much still December that time, someone finally spoke up and they actually caught him. I went to the trial with them and he's in jail.
Wow.
And then the criminal justice department called me and said, hey, do you want to work with us?
That story's on our first episode.
I watched the first episode and I thought, you know, this is an amazing story.
That
is
all true. And to respond actually to what you guys were saying before, for instance, Yes, there is an old way of doing charity and, you know, and not saying. And I think it's amazing. There's a lot of my parents are like this, and I absolutely respect it. There is another way. There is like also what you guys were saying, trying to put up, like put outside of your world a light, like something to say, okay, I'm doing this. I think they both can coexist. And they both are good. In my way, what happened is that I did that. That was me, Simonetta, just really trying to pay forward, because that was a girl like my age. That could have been me. I really felt so, I needed to do something. And then because I'm in this entertainment business, I just happened to speak about it with someone who said, oh my God, that is a story for a TV show. And then it just happened that, you know, it happened and became then an episode of the TV show. And actually the family was so graceful, you know, mm-hmm. because the beautiful thing is that, of course, there was a lot of anger and a lot of, you know, grief. But they told me, hey, sharing this story can inspire a lot of other families that are going through the same. Right. Because honestly, they felt completely left alone. And yet I cannot, course, fix the problems of everyone, but I can at least, you know, give them a hope that if I did it, you know, at least it's possible to move something. That was the intent, and that is the intent that I also try to pursue with the Wish Well Foundation, you know, really to try to give what I call meaningful wishes a chance to bring them outside. Also because, like, for instance, lately I've been very passionate about a couple of wishes, one in the Philippines, one in Africa, and they are there are children that we've been trying to help, and both of them have something tied to literacy, and trying really to bring more awareness about the fact that, you know, these children many times don't even know how to read and write. So that was very important to me. But again, our support was relatively so inexpensive that to me the idea is I want to share these stories because I want to, you know, empower you
right. See, so that, tell that you, hey, I think
you know, with a small part you can do a lot.
That
is, I think, the beauty of social media.
Okay.
Yeah, that is
is far, you know, I think what you've done goes far beyond the rather amazing accomplishments you've been able to succeed to fulfill, but showing that one person can make a difference is really what's behind all this. And that's
inspire other people to make a difference.
Right.
Well, Shelly does that every day.
Every day.
Shelly did it.
Bob does that
with the
every
potheads.
Day.
Dealing with the potheads.
I'm thinking of you know, trying to do something around moving forward with my clients and trying to inspire them instead of try to, you know, sort of get them well, but try to inspire them to want to
change their life.
Use their lives.
There we go.
Simonetta, I got to let you go.
Simonetta,
we can follow
you. Thank
you
so much.
At Simonetta Lein, L-E-I-N, on Twitter and Instagram. Wishwall on Amazon Prime, thewishwall.org. Well done, my dear. And thank you for joining us.
And also, check out our fashions. They're amazing.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah, the link there.
Don't you
go to Dr.
Thank you
Drew,
so much.
This Life, Dr. Drew.
We're going shopping. Yeah. Shelly and I are going shopping.
Yeah, we're
going
to go shopping.
We're gonna put it up
thank
there.
Thank you.
Yeah, so also, thanks again for coming. We could talk all day, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you
thank
much.
You.
Bye-bye.
I really appreciate you guys. Bye. Thank you.
Have a wonderful summer there. Bye-bye. All right.
So are you going to hang in?
I don't know. That's the question. That is the question. It's a fight.
If you don't, what would you do?
Brand
can
herself.
I go back to
brand
school?
Brand herself.
Work with Simonetta. There's a synergy there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Shelly is a brand. I
mean, maybe it is time for you to do something else.
It might be. It might be.
Don't let Paul hear this podcast.
No, I know.
Oh, my God.
We're just talking.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm in for another fight. I've really struggled around the cannabis issue at this point, and
Because people won't get sober. They just refuse.
They refuse to get sober. And at this point,
sober isn't what sober. Sober doesn't mean what sober used to mean.
I understand that. But you, the three of us, know that in order to really thrive and do the kind of work we like to do and to fully recover, you have to be sober.
You got to understand. So I have the luxury that I'm dealing with mostly like 45, 50-year-old, 60-year-old adults. Shelley deals with a whole different population, which
18 to 25.
I can only help those people.
Yeah.
I concluded that about 2 years ago. Like I like millennials. I like the whole drama and chaos of it all. But the fact is, when a 45-year-old, 55-year-old man finally wants to get sober, I know how to help them.
Right.
And it feels so purposeful.
Right.
It does. It does.
In a weird way, the young ones don't want what you got.
They don't. They don't want what I have.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But I struggle with the ethics around saying that I am abstinence-based program. That is developing curriculum that's helping people to maintain recovery. And then what the reality is that I'm trying to coax them from hitting their, you know, weed pens on the way to treatment.
on the way to group therapy. Yeah. Can you imagine,
so
Drew,
incredible.
If at Breyer, you know, we had smoke break and they all just hit their CBD oil pens.
It's impossible.
It's very difficult. And it is. What I like about it is I'm leaning into the challenge right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what's
going to
happen.
Well, it's good for you right now because you're going to have an empty nest here pretty soon. So you got to have something.
I need a cause.
Get you up in the morning.
Clearly need a cause. You know,
maybe there's something, you know, in social media or something.
There might be something else going on.
Something else.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm pretty tired of the make cannabis work, treatment centers. Mm-hmm. It's just talking to these young kids and the inundation,
they know that it's wrong.
Of substance
They know
abuse.
That it's wrong that people like us are kowtowing to that. They know. Do you understand what
who's
I'm saying?
They?
The clients themselves.
But I'm
like,
fighting.
Really?
Still.
Really?
But
you're fighting it, but a lot of people aren't.
But the thing is, I have no problem with people on any kind of maintenance, heroin maintenance, marijuana maintenance, methadone maintenance, suboxone maintenance. And they would, anyone in any four of those categories would benefit from some kind of supportive therapies and some vocational rehab. I'd interest in being part of that. Because
that's what you have to decide,
that
right?
It's literally like saying, you know, I'm a physical therapist and I'm only going to work with people that refuse to do what I tell them to do.
Go on the ball. And, that would be me.
And,
I refuse to go on the ball.
Right,
and
right.
Roll around.
That's right. And well, maybe we could spend some time and I could motivate
we
you
could talk
to do
about
a little
the ball.
Something, or we could maybe get a joint moved here and there. And there's people that can do that kind of work, and that's okay. I'm not judging it. I ain't interested in doing it because it's too dangerous. It doesn't go anywhere. What are we doing?
I just realized.
You might just the weed maintenance.
But
might
I
be
just realized.
Whatever.
What yeah. Maybe Shelley's population you changed. Because I was like her. If you think about what she's saying, I was saying the same things 2 and 3 and 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I just realized I can't deal with them.
Okay.
Well, you're saying what I'm saying now.
And it happened at inpatient when I was doing the brain lecture that we kind of copy
amygdala
lecture. I'm doing it for a group of like 30 millennial drug addicts in treatment. And 19-year-old girl raises her hand and just goes, well, I just disagree with all that.
Yeah.
And I said, in Bob-like genuine authenticity,
yes. Uh-huh.
Who gives a fuck what you think? Oh, my God, you should have seen how they wanted to kill me.
Oh,
they
yeah.
wanted to run me out on a rail.
Of course.
And I ran, and I'm driving home, and I'm like, I called Evan. I said, I think I really fucked up right now. You got a damage control. Because, like, they wanted me dead. The other clients,
yes,
they're like, who? How abuses. You treated all this stuff? Oh, you're a horrible person. You're a massage. Mm-hmm. How could you say that to somebody? You're emotionally violent. Mm-hmm. I just told her the truth. Who gives a fuck what a 19-year-old drug addict, heroin addict in treatment thinks?
See, I think right there, but I think right there is the core issue, right?
It is the core issue.
I stopped dealing with 19-year-old drug addicts.
Right, they're coddled to the point that you can't even do treatment. And so maybe somebody else will invent something other than what we do. Or maybe they will unfortunately suffer as a result of the coddling.
It's a meeting the client where they are, and that if they don't, if they can't get sober, can they benefit from treatment is the question. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answers.
But do you want to do that treatment?
What do I? And that has always been one of the questions.
But the thing that we do has great value. They're lining up to pay for it because they want it. Grown adults want it.
Well, maybe these kids will grow up and eventually get to the
later.
Point. Yeah.
There you go.
So then you're planting seeds, right? Yeah. Then you're planting seeds, and that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Is that if I turn away from the population I have to work with, then who is going to work with them, and what are those seeds that are going to be planted?
I would argue that you need somebody with about 10% or 20% of the skill set that you have, because that 80 or 90%, they're not getting it.
No, they're not getting it.
So it doesn't need, you don't need another Shelley to do the work.
But here's what some of my clients of the, we call it the professionals group. Yeah. They'll say, when Suboxone comes up, they're a 45-year-old tech guy said to me a couple weeks ago, dude, I was on it for 10 years. It doesn't fucking work. 45-year-olds know that Suboxone doesn't work. 22-year-olds don't.
That's right. No. And that's as we always say, they have to go do it. It's a new version of having to go.
And that's a good example.
You
have to do it for 10 years till you realize it doesn't work.
You have to go experiment. They have to go experiment and learn on their own. They don't want to hear it from us. And okay, that's reality. And we have to accept things as they are.
That is the reality. Yeah. And working in the framework of what, you know, third party payer, and then, you know, the medical, you know,
medically managed care. They have initials for all this stuff. What's
MAT?
MAT, medically assisted treatment.
Yes.
What the fuck is that?
Well, that's Suboxone.
But that's what I'm doing.
Oh, come on, Shelley. It's going to be all right. It's Sunday. We're going to have a nice day.
Okay, let's have a nice day. I'm not on medically managed.
You're
not on MAT.
I would argue that Shelley's talents could be used
better,
more fully
somewhere else.
Perhaps.
Maybe
perhaps.
So. Perhaps. All right.
Well, that's great. I'm glad I came here today.
Perhaps. But
maybe you could get back in a band. You've always wanted to be in a band.
You know,
she played with Keith Richards, you know.
I did not. My ex...
You were on stage.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that I had anything to do with Keith Richards. But I like how Bob is so, you know, generous with, you know, my talents.
You could really be a singer in a band. Trust me, you're Shelley the Shark.
Yes, I know. But the problem is that you need to actually be able to sing,
Ivy can teach you. Ivy can teach you.
Do we have to sing?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, he can sing and he can't get a gig. He can't get a gig.
He's a good singer.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Love coming here. Thank you so much, Susan.
Love you guys.
Thank you, Nate.
All right, see you next time.
Bye.
All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Thanks for listening and subscribing on your favorite platforms. Rate us 5 stars and tell a friend. Also, be sure to visit drdrew.com for the latest news. We'll tell you where you can find all of our health-related content, including the latest in-depth series, The History of Opium. You can now listen to it on the weekly Infusion podcast. We have some great and very interesting and appropriate interviews with key historical players in the history of opium. We're excited about our newest podcast, Dr. Drew After Dark, which has been described as a dark web reboot of Loveline. It's the hottest guest spot for all the most popular comedians. Beware, it is for a mature audience. It is kind of a reboot of Loveline. You can hear the episodes first in a podcast form Thursday. Then on Friday, you can watch all the video episodes when the YouTube page drops on the Your Mom's House YouTube channel. New episodes every week. Subscribe, tell a friend. Also on Dr.com, you can find Swole Patrol, our health and fitness podcast with Mike Catherwood. If you want something a bit more refined that will expand your intellectual horizons, please subscribe to the Dr. Drew podcast, where I feature a wide variety of very interesting and important guests. Get in-depth interviews there. Last but not least, me and Adam and Dr. Drew Show podcast. It's a lot of fun, and we are still together, and you can get it 5 days a week. So go to drdrew.com. Please tell a friend, and we thank you for it. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.